Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050. Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN1050 and on the TSN app. Brian Hayes, Steve Simmons in here. Bruce McNall is going to call in just a matter of moments. 30th anniversary of the Wayne Gretzky trade. And I think this trade has really become a demarcation for generational gaps in the sports world. I think 40 and up, when you think of the biggest player transactions of players in their primes, 40 years old and up, you think of Gretzky. 40 and under, you think of LeBron. And I think that's even the case in Canada. I know that might sound sacrilegious. How can you not talk about Gretzky? How can you not believe that the Gretzky deal is bigger? I think if you talk to the average 30-year-old sports fan in Canada, for obvious reasons, because they wouldn't remember what happened 30 years ago, they'd say the DeMar LeBron decision was a bigger moment, more important moment, or more talked about moment, because it happened more recently, and they were alive for it, and they got to experience it.
Different from in so many ways, because the individual in basketball means so much more than the individual in hockey means. But the individual we're talking about in hockey is the greatest accumulator of points, and to some people's mind, the greatest player who ever played.
Well, LeBron's in the same spot.
Yeah, yeah. But from a Canadian market that had been on a run of Stanley Cups, the Edmonton Oilers were the team of that decade, maybe the team of any decade. And there was a Canadian-American thing to the Gretzky thing. LeBron is all U.S. There's no real Canadian element to it at all. So we in Canada, and I'm saying that in a generic we, took the selling of Gretzky, because let's be honest, it wasn't a trade, it was a sell. We took the selling of Gretzky personal because we lost our treasure and that great team, although they did win one more Stanley Cup at that point in time. And it
but they
was
had
like,
the same feeling in Akron and in Cleveland.
Yeah, but Akron in Cleveland didn't equate to a country. It equated to a city.
Yeah. No, I understand.
And I think that's the difference between the two. There was this is the end of an era, because in Canada, in small town Alberta or big town Alberta, Edmonton being a bigger city in that province, couldn't keep him anymore. And that's what it was about. Like letting your kid go to a fly, like letting the bird fly away.
Right.
So the
symbolism of it was differently. Also, you know, Gretzky got traded, but I don't think anyone believes that he didn't know what was going on and he had some say in it.
Oh, sure. He was party to
of course
most of it, I thought.
But LeBron was a free agent and made that choice. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, for the first 20, 25 years of my life, that when you talked about a transaction in pro sports, and it wasn't only from a Canadian slant, it was the Gretzky trade. The greatest player of all time got traded. That created the saying, if Gretzky can get traded, anybody can get traded. But I think, again, as I've grown older, and because I got to experience the decision of LeBron, unlike the way I didn't get to experience the Gretzky trade, I was 5 years old. I don't remember it. LeBron created, if LeBron can leave, anybody can leave. So I think,
but LeBron left as a free agent.
Right. That made it a lot easier for Kevin Durant to say, well, then if he left, I can leave too. And, you know, other players to be like Kyrie Irving, and even though he wasn't a free agent, but guys to be like, if LeBron said I'm turning my back on his hometown, anybody can do it.
Well, look at today.
He's a trailblazer.
Look at today. What happens with Canadian teams in the NHL? We're now looking at a drought of 25 years since the last Canadian team won a Stanley Cup. We're going to go back to the 80s for a minute. You're born what year?
1983.
Okay, the year after you were born, the Edmonton Oilers win the Stanley Cup. And a Canadian team wins the Cup 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89 and 90. Since then, once. The whole world changed.
Right.
After the Gretzky deal.
And the only thing that broke that streak up was Lemieux and the Penguins going back-to-back, and then the Habs won in 93.
Yeah, and then from then on, there have been Canadian teams in the finals unsuccessfully. Vancouver has been there. Edmonton has been there. Calgary has been there. But there has not been any success. But think of, I don't think there will ever be a streak like that again.
No, because the league has expanded the way that it has, and there's a salary cap now, so you can't build up those kind of super teams like Edmonton had and like Calgary had, and even, I guess, the Habs in a way in 86. But I don't think that's necessarily because of Gretzky and what that represented and how all these players were all of a sudden going to flock to the United States. I think in large part for 25 years, you've had a lot of ownerships in Canada that have been incompetent. And that's been the biggest problem.
Oh, that's never been
an issue. Look at the 80s are the perfect example. What was the one Canadian team that never had a sniff? This one.
Yes.
Well, who's the owner?
Yeah, well, there's
Harold Ballard.
There's a whole other story there. I mean, the team that always gets me in that nine-year run are the Calgary Flames. And I covered them, so I look at it differently. That's a Stanley Cup team that should have won, I don't know, two, three cups. They won one.
Right. And they lost to the Habs in 86.
They lost to the Habs in 86 and beat the Habs in 89. But
right.
They, you know, they should have won, you know, two or three cups with the talent that they had. But when you have Gretzky and Messier and Coffey and Fuhrer and all those guys together.
Not easy.
No.
Here is the former owner of the Kings, former owner of the Argonauts as well. Some local content here. I believe he's been on the show before. I don't think I've ever interviewed him before, though. On the 30th anniversary of the Wayne Gretzky trade, here is Bruce McNall. How you doing, Bruce?
Fine, thank you. Well,
yeah, thank you for doing this. What does this date mean to you?
Yeah, well, it's quite a memory, that's for sure. What it means to me mainly is being on the phone a lot. Otherwise, it's a great day. You know, it's a great memory, and you know, I was thrilled to be able to be a part of it all. And it was something that I think anyway helped to bring hockey to more of the southern states and more relevant to the United States in general. So I'm proud of being a part of that.
Well, Steve categorized it as Gretzky was sold to the LA Kings. Is that how you see it? Do you take issue with that definition or what?
No, he's pretty much right. I don't think, in today's world, it would never be able to happen because it was $15 million in cash was the first issue. Now, there were, the players involved and the graphics involved as well because it had to appear to be a somewhat of a trade. But, yeah, I would agree.
So, Bruce, what was your purpose in... I know the Vancouver was involved. I think Detroit at one time was involved. What was your purpose in bringing him to L.A., and what did you attempt to create?
Yeah, the other cities, really weren't too much involved at the time because it was a case where they, after the fact, kind of, what about this? What happened with me at the time was simply that I thought, I would go to the games when I was young, and I guess I remember one or two. There's nobody. What about the team?
Okay, we got to get him on a better line. We'll see if he can get into a better cell reception or on a landline. That was falling off a cliff pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It's too bad because he's an engaging guy, charismatic guy. We'll get him back.
The time Peter Pocklington was the owner of the Edmonton Oilers, and Peter Pocklington had some financial issues. And so this trade took care of some of the financial issues that Peter Pocklington needed, and he stuck with what was left of the core of the Oilers through the 90 Stanley Cup.
Doesn't that get forgotten, though, that they still won without Gretzky? Like, I find like that is a very significant accomplishment that I get the sense is completely overlooked.
They won without Gretzky. They won without Grant Fuhrer. Bill Ranford was the goalie. And I believe Paul Coffey by that time had been traded. So that was a very surprising win. People weren't expecting that 90 team to win the cup. And Bill Ranford played extraordinarily well in goal. And I think that's, people look at the Rangers and the 94 championship with Mark Messier. I think that's a crowning achievement of some kind because it was New York and the Rangers were in that league. But I think the 1990 Stanley Cup win by that team with Messier, without Gretzky and without Fuhr and without Coffey.
Right.
I think Fuhr was on the team but not healthy. That was one.
That's
of the
a pretty
great,
big accomplishment.
Yeah, one of the
but
great.
But because it's post Gretzky, people are like, nah, whatever, who cares?
And Gretzky only had one real good playoff run with the LA Kings,
and we all know which one it was.
Yeah, 93, yeah. And
high stick in Game Six.
Well, the Marty McSorley stick measurement in Game One or Two of that final.
Yeah.
Which changed the whole whole complexion of the final.
I think we have Bruce McNall back on. Do we have you, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what happened there, but I'm back.
Okay, all good. And Steve was asking you about the significance of Gretzky in not only Southern California, but how big of a factor do you think that trade played in the expansion of the NHL in the southern markets to begin with?
Yeah, I think what I got, Wayne and I both just thought it was to make L.A. relevant for the sport and improve the team. But very quickly thereafter, when we saw the impact that it was having, that's when I thought, well, let's drag Wayne all over the country and see if we get some interest. And we'd sell out every place we went and sort of creating that interest. And obviously Wayne is, very much, I think, the part of the reason that we do have the teams we have. Certainly when I was chairman of the league and I was running around trying to get expansion teams, both the Ducks and Florida, for example, I think if without Wayne, I doubt there would be any interest whatsoever. So I think it was, something we hadn't planned on, but it worked out great.
So who called who first? Did you call Peter Pocklington first, or did he call you first?
I would see Peter at the meetings all the time, and I always bug him about it. I would always say, "Hey, how about Gretzky?" He'd laugh at me, so he'd give me the whole team, and I wouldn't trade for Gretzky, and I didn't blame him. So, and then finally in June of 88, he called me and he said, "Hey, if you're still interested, we could talk. But first of all, I want $15 million cash." And then I want some players and draft picks and so forth. And I said, "Okay, done. Let's do it." So I was over-enthusiastic probably, but I wanted to jump on as fast as I could.
Did he believe you? Like, was there any more negotiation? Did he think maybe I should ask for $30 million or what?
No, there's no negotiation on the money. The amount of money was the same $15 million U.S. from day one. There was no change to that at all. Then he asked me to speak to Glenn Sather, and Sather was furious, mainly at Pocklington. Wouldn't talk to me about it. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to do it. And finally, he kind of had to come along a little bit, but... they wanted Robitaille, and I didn't want that to happen, so we went back and forth. And then when Wayne finally realized it was going to happen, he sort of became my undercover general manager and suggested, "Hey, we got to get Marty with this and Krasilinski, and how about let's take the three first-round draft picks we're giving them and stagger them every other year." So he was very much involved at that time to figure out what he thought would be the best as well.
So Los Angeles... In some ways, is Toronto, or maybe Toronto's like Los Angeles. It's a star-driven market, and it's a place where people want to go and feel like they're part of something big.
Right.
How much did the LA Kings fan base change when Wayne Gretzky came to Los Angeles?
Well, I mean, it went from... there were a couple of stars that liked the game. I mean, Alan Thicke would go to the games and John Candy occasionally. But it became... after that, it became a zoo. I mean, I couldn't manage all the stars wanting to come. Some bought tickets and had them forever, like Tom Hanks and so forth. But, all of a sudden, I've got every Hollywood star in the world looking to come. Luckily enough, most of the agencies would go and buy seats as best they could. Those that they couldn't accommodate, I did, and it became a place to be seen and a place to, it just changed the whole dynamic of the whole. It became a place to go, kind of like the Laker games were during the Magic Johnson era.
We're chatting with Bruce McNall on the 30th anniversary of the Wayne Gretzky trade. I've always been intrigued by how Hollywood works. Like when you say these superstars wanted to come to the game, you didn't directly talk to them, or would you always go through the agents because you knew the agents had to pay?
No, they sometimes they didn't. If I could accommodate them somehow, I tried my best. I was limited in seating, but they could sit, you know, in the box upstairs with me, which is not a great place. Or occasionally I had my own eye seats. I would give those to those guys. I would talk to them directly. For the most part, I would say 90% of them was always directly. Although if there were people I didn't know, then their agents would call, and we'd go from there. But usually when they came to the games after that, they would call me directly.
We all know Pocklington was a villain immediately in Edmonton, and he still is. That name rings out in Edmonton today. But what about yourself? I mean, are you a hated figure in Edmonton? What was the reception like back?
What's surprising is right after the trade, when we played up there, I would go there, and actually the fans of Edmonton were great to me. They didn't like Peter at all, but I think from their standpoint, they thought, wow, if I could have done that, you know, no matter where we live, it would be, you know, who wouldn't? So I think that, and the fact that they knew I was taking care of Wayne in a way that wasn't probably very much possible down up at Edmonton at that time. So I think they were very good to me at all times.
In Toronto, there are great regrets about the 1993 series with the LA Kings, and I'm sure in LA and in your mind, there are great regrets about the Stanley Cup final that year. What are your memories of the 93 final, and how much has it bugged you over the years that you didn't win?
Well, it was such a great series with Toronto, and I remember in, you know, game 7 in Toronto, we were not exactly favored, to say the least, and Dougie Gilmore was having a great series, and I was down the locker rooms, you know, kind of, you know, pacing back and forth, nervous, and I remember Wayne came over to me and said, what's the matter? And I said, well, Wayne, I'm nervous as hell. He said, if you forgot who I am, just relax, I got this. And he went out and got five points, and we won that series, so it was an incredible moment for me. And unfortunate that we lost the series, like you said, and we won the first game in Montreal, the second game that the Marty Stick incident happened. But frankly, as Wayne says, if it wasn't for Marty, we wouldn't have gotten that far anyway. So there's certainly no blame on Marty for that.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, Bruce. If it wasn't for Kerry Fraser, you wouldn't be that far. I mean, I think most people in Toronto know that was a high stick in Game 6. I mean, did you leave that rink thinking, wow, I owe Kerry Fraser a lot of money here, or some sort of adulation, because he got you guys to the Cup final. We all know it, Bruce.
Oh, come on now. He is in our Hall of Fame, actually, in L.A.
Should be.
A lot of these games are won and lost by calls like that. You know, that call, potentially, the call with Marty is another one. So it happens. Just keep playing the game and hope things fall your way, I guess.
In this market, they hope one day that Austin Matthews of Scottsdale, Arizona, can carry the Stanley Cup on the ice at the Air Canada Center. And I wonder, were it not for Wayne Gretzky and expansion into markets that did not seem like traditional hockey markets, would we have an Austin Matthews today? Would we have a Shane Gostisbehere out of Florida? Would we have so many players out of California in the NHL? How much an impact did Wayne Gretzky have at that?
Well, I think he was everything. I doubt that you'd have any of the players that you mentioned if it wasn't for Wayne. I mean, I've talked to them before, and, you know, like Austin Matthews, and he said, you know, hey, my dad took me to the, you know, was all excited. He would go to the games, and, you know, that's what got him excited about the sport in the first place, which led Austin to go ahead and, you know, get into that as well. So I think without question there was a, you know, it's a huge, huge thing that Wayne did that got the interest nationally, and therefore added players and cities that didn't know much about it. And I think it was a really cool for everybody that way.
Really great catching up with you. Thank you for looking back on that big date 30 years ago. And I'm sure in another year, probably a year to the date, we'll probably call you back.
You got it. Anytime.
All right. There's Bruce McNall, the former owner of the Kings and an architect in the Gretzky trade 30 years ago today.
And Bruce McNall, when you look at it large picture, wasn't in pro sport for as many years as you might think he was in, but he was involved in two of the largest either transactions of some kind or shocking transactions, really, in sports history. He was part of the Gretzky buy in Los Angeles. And when he came to Toronto, not that many days before the NFL draft, and Rocket Ismail was to be the first pick in the NFL draft, he was a huge part in that signing that brought Rocket Ismail to Toronto, which was front page of the New York Times and the LA Times and every other paper in North America. That's how big that signing was in 1991.
How much money do you think a CFL owner would have to pay, and there's a salary cap, so you couldn't do it anyway, to get Baker Mayfield to not accept going first overall to the Browns?
Well, like, it's only happened
$100 million guaranteed? I don't know what the money would be.
Something along those lines, although these guys now are getting a lot less because they've sold out the rookies in the NFL.
They're still making a pretty penny.
Yeah, comparatively. Like, when Eli Manning came in, I think he was around $20 million. I think
more than that. I think Sam Bradford made something like $50 million guaranteed.
Now there's a rookie salary and there's bonus. It's like the NHL. You're tied to bonuses and it's not nearly as significant. But only twice in my memory has the first pick, or what was going to be the first pick in the NFL draft, signed in the CFL. One was Rocket Ismail did it, and so he didn't get drafted first. I believe, did Dallas have the first pick or New England? One of the two of them had the first pick, which sounds kind of funny by today's standards, but and Ismail came to Toronto, and Tom Cousineau, a linebacker, I don't know if you know that name, a linebacker, I believe with Ohio State, was signed by the Montreal Alouettes after he was drafted first overall in the NFL. That would have been in the 70s. That kind of thing just is impossible by today's economics.
That's a great troll job. Team wasting a first overall pick and the guy goes and plays in a different country. That's got to be really gratifying if you're the Alouettes.
Yeah, one time, like around this early 70s, late 60s.
Because of the money, right?
The money for, not first round picks, but the money for third or fourth or fifth round guys was quite similar between the CFL and the NFL. So players who were in that, thought they could play, would often make the decision to come north. You know, today there's nothing like that. But for when Ismail signed,
it was $1 million, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was shocking. It was absolutely shocking across the board. You know, and the NFL, you know, you don't slap the NFL. They don't take that well.
Well, eventually he got back there, but he never really...
He was okay.
He didn't make it in the NFL.
No, I mean, he was okay. He had some okay seasons. Mm-hmm. If you look back, the numbers are all right, but yeah, they're not superstar numbers.
I took the money. Yeah. I don't blame him.
I would have taken it too, and he got, like... The thing with McNall was, he was one of the great... He's one of the great schmoozers of all time. Like, he knew how to run the private plane and to bring his people along, and he had his little core of people that always... And never mind all the problems in the prison and the other things that went on in his life. But we'll just gloss over that for a moment.
Well, that's a lot like Trump. I mean, everything you hear about Trump, in terms of if you actually meet him, incredibly charming, always about you. Like, if you lived in one of his buildings, people say he'd go out of his way to be like, is everything all right? Is there anything I can do for you? And then, obviously, there's some other stuff that comes with that.
At the training camp in 1991, the Argos are at Guelph. And it is like 5,000 degrees, much as like it's been this summer. And it is hot as can be. And I'm out there in a T-shirt and shorts and sweating like you wouldn't believe. And there's Bruce in a suit with a tie done up. And he's not a thin man. He's a little on the other side.
He's a grit grinder.
And not a drop of sweat on him. It was one of the phenomenal things I've ever seen. Like, and I look over and I'm like, how are you not sweating? Bruce McNall didn't sweat.
He perfected the non-sweat in a suit.
Which is pretty hard to do when it's 90 or 30 something out.
I think everybody would sweat in a situation like that. That everybody would.
Not Bruce.
I guess not.
So made him.
I'll take your word for it.
And in one conversation, just after he bought the team, and this is where you learn a little bit about the guy. I said, what do you do for a living? He says, well, I do a little of this and a little of that. No, I said, what, you know, where do you make your money? Like, what's the primary? Well, I trade coins and I trade stamps and you could never pin him down. And I make movies. Like,
he's an importer exporter.
Yeah. Vandalay. He was Vandalay Industries before there was Vandalay Industries.
Say Vandalay. I would love to look back in one of your pieces in the Sun in the 90s. Bruce McNall affiliated with Vandalay Industries.
Well, I have time for a quick Vandalay Industries story?
Yeah, go ahead.
When I was coaching in the GTHL, we had a deal where every player on the team had to sell his own sponsorship for $300, and the money went to the team. But this way, instead of going out and trying to get $5,000 from some company, everyone went and got $300 from the local barber or the grocery store or whatever. Well, one of the fathers decided, I'm not going to bother anyone. I'm, I'm too dignified to go and get $300.
To grovel over
yes.
that.
He paid the $300 and put Vandalay Industries
good for him.
On the back of his kid's jersey. And every single game we played, a referee would come over to the bench and have a good chuckle.
That's
over
outstanding, man. Because as long as he put up the money,
yep.
right? If it's
put
$300, who cares where it came from?
Didn't matter.
Vandalay Industries.
Went to the big pot.
That's right. Importer, exporter.
Perfect.
Kawhi Leonard making a statement talking about his time in San Antonio. No mention of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, or the Raptors. What do we read into it? We'll get to it next. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I guess I can bet the NFL preseason tonight, and there's a scene going on down in Buffalo because the Bills are playing host to Carolina, which means Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin are on the same field tonight. And I don't know if you saw these comments or heard about these comments, but Kelvin Benjamin, wideout for the Bills, who used to play in Carolina, got traded last year. He took the run of all runs at Cam Newton. Like, I thought it was, it felt completely out of left field. It felt kind of gutless, quite frankly. Like, it was too harsh. And let me just refresh your memory here if you missed these comments from Kelvin Benjamin. Because I don't remember any other wideouts or running backs or O-linemen who leave a scenario where everyone knows the importance of a quarterback. And they might feel this way, but they don't go on the record and say this. This is what Benjamin said about Cam. Quote, if you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real, you know what I'm saying? Any other accurate QB like Rodgers or Eli or Big Ben, anybody. Quarterbacks with knowledge that know how to place a ball and give you a better chance to catch the ball, it just felt like I wasn't in that position, end quote. Basically saying Cam Newton, who won the MVP, what, 2 years ago? First overall pick, has been in a Super Bowl, that he's talking about Cam Newton like he's one of the he's Jay Cutler or Rex Grossman. Like, this is Cam Newton, who I know is a polarizing guy. I've always supported him. I think he's an immense talent. But Benjamin went at him, and there's video on the field of Benjamin warming up and Cam Newton confronting him, and you can't hear the audio, but it looks tense. Like, Cam Newton confronted him in Buffalo over the past half an hour.
Well, it should be tense. In one of those seasons, Carolina went to the Super Bowl and was 15-1 in the regular season. As you say, Cam Newton was the MVP. Now, is he a traditional drop back passer, find guys open kind of quarterback? No. He plays it a little differently. You can argue, as over the past couple years, certainly, that teams have figured him out a little bit and it's gotten more difficult. But I don't remember Benjamin, anyone even saying at the time, boy, Benjamin needs the ball more.
It's not like he's Randy Moss. And what do you think you're going to get in Buffalo?
Well, here's
if Nathan Peterman is throwing at you, Jay Peterman's going to be tossing picks all over Buffalo tonight. What are you expecting?
Well, you're hoping that the kid can play, is what you're hoping. I guess that's the whole hope of the organization now, whether it's this year or next year.
The kid being Josh Allen,
yeah.
Not
but
Jay Peterman.
There is a, and it seems to be wide receivers more than any other position, because those are the look at me guys. Much more so than the quarterbacks seem to be. Get me the ball. The quarterback has the ball, so he can put it wherever he wants it. But the receiver is helpless if he doesn't get the football. And I presume Benjamin has an ego, and I presume he thinks highly of himself, and he thinks probably more highly of himself than his ability thus far, because I don't remember him doing a whole lot in Buffalo last year.
No, I mean, he's a big guy. His rookie year, he put up big numbers, then he got injured. He's a young kid. He's barely been in the league, and he's popping off. He's also misinformed. Like, he says he wishes he played with Eli Manning. Have you been watching Eli the past couple of years?
Well, it depends which Eli you're referring to.
The bad Eli from the past 2 years.
Well, Saquon Barkley's going to change all that this year, I hope. Because it's hard not to like Eli Manning, and all the Mannings for that matter. They're very likable people, so you hope they do well. But in Benjamin's case, it's like, I give him credit for saying what he said, because I never want to silence anybody or their opinions. I just wonder, where was it coming from, and what exactly happened between them that created that problem?
Well, I'm watching the video right now, and Benjamin wouldn't even shake his hand, and Cam's just chasing him around the field. Like, you got to see this video. It is going to be all over Twitter, all over Instagram. This is a walking, talking meme that is going to blow up social media, because Cam Newton is trying to get an answer from Kelvin Benjamin. Everyone knows what they're talking about. Cam probably, he must have felt remarkably insulted, like he should. And I give him credit because he's got the stones here to see him and walk up to him and be like, what's up? Give me an answer.
In fairness to Cam Newton, he's taken a beating over the last few years, and he hasn't taken it well. And it's hard to take it well when you're 1 minute you're the MVP and you're in the Super Bowl. And in that Super Bowl game, whatever Denver did to Cam Newton, it was like they figured him out and they exposed him. And he's not been very good since then. He's not been dominant. He's not been game-changing. And so, you know, maybe he's sensitive about what has happened over time to his career. And or on the other side, and we see this sometimes too, is that a guy is so wrapped up in his own career and his own beliefs and his own ego that he can't see that he's not the guy that many people thought he was going
to
be.
But quarterbacks are held to a completely different standard. Everything they do and say is micro-analyzed. They have to play by a certain playbook. They have to be the face of the team, the leaders of the team. They have to set the tone. So Cam Newton, his instincts may be to pop off and start yelling and screaming and throwing Calvin Benjamin under the bus, but he knows it's not in his best interest to do that because of the position he plays.
Well, win some games. You know, to me,
two years ago, they won 15-1 and went to the Super Bowl, and he won an MVP.
But since then, he has not looked like that MVP quarterback. So the one thing you can look at, and we can judge quarterbacks based on what their offensive lines are and who their receivers are and what the running backs and who the coordinators are. And there's so many factors involved, and never mind the crazy quarterback rating numbers that nobody in the world understands, but we quote way too often. But you look at my perspective, and I've had coaches tell me this. You look at a great coach and a great coach's record, look at who his quarterback is. You won't find a great coach with a great record and having a bunch of run-of-the-mill guys as his quarterbacks. You know, you look at Tom Landry's career, look at Shula's career, look at, you know, whoever you want to pick, they all had those guys along with them. You need, the quarterback is unlike any other player in sport. There's nothing that compares.
There isn't, but the closest would be goaltending in hockey, and it's the same kind of thing. You'd be the greatest coach in the world if your goaltending's awful. You're not going to win.
You're not winning when Pekka Rinne can't stop anything in the playoffs.
Right. Even though he just won the Vezina.
Yeah, well, that is the weirdest thing. It's like Dwayne Casey winning Coach of the Year after they're blasted out by Cleveland.
Well, I was thinking about it the past couple of nights because TSN's going to come out with their top 50 NHLers going into the season, and it's a projection for 2018-2019. And I'm a part of the voting, and I don't know if you've been doing that.
In fact, I just got the email the other day about it.
So I was starting to put some thought into it, and I'm like, how do I not have the reigning Vezina winner in the top 50? But I don't know if I'm going to put Pekka Rinne in the top 50 because it's not about what he did last year. It's about what he did what he's going to do. And I can't imagine he's not scarred from the way he played in the playoffs.
I really believed, and I never had the conversation with David Poile, so I can't, you know, sort of extend it. But I really believed Nashville was going to trade him in the summer. Because I don't think you can go back to the playoffs with Pekka Rinne after what he did. Let's go back 2 years. Let's go back to the Stanley Cup final against Pittsburgh. What he did in the Stanley Cup final, and then what he did in this year's playoffs, and say, we can win with this guy. I don't believe you can. And I don't believe I bet you there's nobody in that Nashville dressing room, despite they're going to tell you differently to your face, that they believe that they can win with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's had two real good shots at it, and he's blown it both times.
And he's not a kid. He's like 35.
No.
So 36 years
old. I'll be honest, I haven't started my top list yet, but the one email I sent to the person who sent me the list was, I think this year I'll have Taylor Hall on my list.
I'm pretty sure he's in the top 50.
Yeah, he wasn't on mine last year.
I don't think I had Nathan MacKinnon on my top 50 last year either. I'd have to go back and look.
Error me.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be in. But that's the beauty of sports, is the unpredictability. And I wanted to get into this earlier because Jalen Rose was talking about it on ESPN's morning show today. He's a voter for the NBA's MVP. And we don't have to play the clip, but he went on to say LeBron's a lock to win the MVP this upcoming season, which that's the safe money because he's LeBron. What he's done during the offseason, the school in Akron, the social justice stuff, also the fact that the Lakers have been an awful team, and if they make the playoffs this year and LeBron puts up whatever stats LeBron generally puts up, he's probably going to win the MVP. I'd make the argument he probably should have won it this year, the year before, every single year he's been in the league for the most part.
Well, here's the thing, though.
But it's another predictable element of this upcoming NBA season. The Warriors are going to win the finals, win the title, and LeBron's going to win the MVP. So what are we playing for?
Because in the MVP, the way the MVP works in the NBA, it's the guy who isn't LeBron who wins the MVP.
I think Kawhi Leonard should have a real shot at that if he shows up and plays the way that he's capable of playing. Because, again, fresh blood, they win 60-plus games.
Well, the new guy always has it. Like, Harden was there, and Westbrook was a candidate, and you know, Curry is in that position, and Durant is in that position. But it's because LeBron knows how to play the regular season. And by that, I mean he knows how to coast when he has to coast. He knows when he has to play hard. He plays at a completely different level at playoff time. It's like, well, we'll look at someone else. And that's, you know, it's wrong. I mean, Sidney Crosby, I think, last year, if I'm not mistaken, was not in the top 10, I think, for the first time in Hart Trophy voting for a very long time, or not near the top anyhow. And he wasn't a finalist for the award. And let's be honest, there are two players in the NHL better than every other one. Everybody else.
Yeah, it's McDavid and Sid.
Yeah, and it's a question of who's one, who's two. You can make that debate. I'll take the Stanley Cups until the other guy wins Stanley Cups. But that said, when the season was going on, when I was voting for the Hart Trophy, I was looking at MacKinnon, and I was looking at Taylor Hall, and I was looking at Barkov, and I was looking at a whole bunch. Giroux and
Kucherov
and whoever else was involved, because those guys were having great seasons in the context of that 82 games, when Sid had kind of, I'm not going to say coast is not the right word, had mid 80s in points.
Yeah, wasn't as dominant as he could be potentially.
If Sidney Crosby plays Sidney Crosby hockey for 82 games, he's going to get 100 and something points. But the last 4 years, he's, I think, 84, 85, 89, 89, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's because he understands that he has to be ready in April, and he's got to be healthy in April. And so there's nights when you don't go as hard. And I think that's the thing with LeBron. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that will tell you LeBron's not the best basketball player in the world.
No, he is. And I think that may actually factor into the way they utilize Kawhi Leonard here in Toronto this year. Is he going to play 82 games? I don't see it. Are they going to try to game plan with him? You know, let's work out 70 games. Let's avoid, you know, back-to-backs on long road trips against the West. Yet I could imagine that he might push back and be like, listen, man, it's a contract year. I don't want to give off this vibe like I'm an injury-riddled player.
But there's a subtlety to his game where he's not the guy you often look at and say, that's your MVP. When a guy's a defensive stopper, for example, at the level that Kawhi Leonard is, you know, that's not what gets people. That doesn't show the highlights on it. Look at how he's shut down so-and-so today.
Right, but if you match it with averaging 25 points a night and, you know, 6 boards and 6 assists with 65 wins.
Yeah, then
you're into a different conversation.
Yeah, then you are. What we don't know, and we won't know until we see, is how he fits in and where he fits in and how this
we don't know anything about Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
Like, again, he issued this statement today, a thank you to San Antonio, that just sounded so empty and so hollow.
So what do you think he paid the PR firm or his agents to write that?
I'm not sure. I could see being his uncle. It sounds like his uncle is the puppeteer that does everything.
Or maybe someone just decided, you know what, Kawhi, we have to do something here.
It's been almost a month.
You're not going to do it. I've been in this business, Brian, longer than you've been alive.
Yes.
I've never seen a situation where a team traded for a player, especially a big-name player, but traded for any player, and it's been almost a month, and no one's heard from the guy. He's like off in the desert somewhere, lost. Like, I've never seen that before. I have no recollection. Even guys who are considered like the most miserable people in the sports, never seen this. This is one of the... We are headed into one of the great mystery seasons of ever. All mystery seasons.
Right. And as I said earlier, I think if I were a betting man, which I am, and I were offered to take either Kawhi or the field in terms of what will get more collective coverage from print, radio, TV, online, I think Kawhi Leonard individually will be covered more so than the rest of the field, which includes a new head coach, a team coming off 59 wins, a team with guys like Kyle Lowry on it, Serge Ibaka, big names. But I think it's going to be the year of Kawhi here in Toronto.
Well, Kyle Lowry is going to be put in a situation that Kyle Lowry won't be real happy about. This is just by circumstance. They now have picked up Kawhi Leonard. On every team, in every sport, and more so in basketball, because there are so few players that of consequence, someone has to be the go-to post-game, after-practice guy to sit there with five cameras in your face and answer inane questions. Mm-hmm. Someone's got to be that guy.
Yeah, it happens. You've got to parade somebody out there.
And there are fewer of them in basketball. When you remove one completely from the mix, in Kawhi Leonard's case, it's going to be Kyle. And in Kyle's case, Kyle doesn't like doing it. And I've texted him numerous times since the trade was made. I have phoned him numerous times since the trade's made. Guess what? Haven't got a call or a return text at all.
No, he's not talking until he shows up. He's not talking until he shows up, and Kawhi is doing the same thing.
The whole team is in hiding.
Yeah.
The witness protection program we're going to get going.
That's where they're at right now with the Raptors. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the CFL board, I'm on Edmonton laying the points on the road tonight. I will take the points with Hamilton and Winnipeg, and I'm laying the points. It's a big spread. Ottawa, 14.5 over Johnny Manziel and the Alouettes on Saturday night. Throw down 20, you could score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. We'll recap what has been a busy afternoon and start teeing up the weekend as well. With Steve Simmons, I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Steve, you're back in here tomorrow, I believe.
I am, and you're not.
I will not be here. I'm off to lovely Buffalo, New York.
Well, if you run into Cam Newton, say hi.
I'm going to try to do that.
Tell him you think he's a really good quarterback.
I like Cam Newton. I've always been pro-Cam. I have. I think, you know, he's a hybrid. He can run. He's tough. He takes hits. He takes a lot of hits.
He lost a little bit of me at that Super Bowl.
With the media stuff?
No, not the media stuff. Just how he kind of handled that game. And I thought he didn't tough it out. And I thought he should have. And, there was a play where I forget the play now.
Right. But he trailed off. The next year, they went like 5-11, and he didn't have good stats. And he's not Brady or Rodgers.
No, but...
But he's not a plug. He's not a bottom third quarterback in the league.
Well, I love the athletic quarterback. Just to watch them. You know, whether it's Deshaun Watson or Cam Newton or RG3 when he had his good...
Aaron Rodgers is athletic, man. Yeah, he can dance.
Very athletic. Elway, in his prime, was athletic as can be. I mean, if Elway had a different coach when he was playing, I think his numbers would be off the charts.
Flutie, there's been a lot of
them. Flutie was different. Flutie was more scrambly, run around, kind of different kind of fun athletic, though. Flutie was a riot to watch, both in the NFL and the CFL.
Johnny Football back in action on Saturday.
So far, not a riot.
Not so laughable at this point. Well, I guess you could describe it that way. All right, Steve, enjoy it tomorrow, man.
We'll be here, and I'll see you Friday, I guess.
Yes, you will. There's Steve Simmons from the Toronto Sun. He'll be in here tomorrow afternoon. I am out of here, off for the rest of the week, back Monday at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.